Angua hesitated. It was still moonlight outside. She could tell him, run downstairs, change, and be well outside the city by dawn. She'd have to do it. She was an expert at running away from cities.
It wasn't exactly like that, she said. You see, there's a lot of undead in the city, and the patrician insisted that...
Give her a kiss, said Gaspard from under the bed.
Angua froze. Carrot's face took on the usual vaguely puzzled look of someone whose ears have just heard what their brain is programmed to believe doesn't exist. He began to blush.
Gaspard,
snapped Angua, dropping into canine.
I know what I'm doing. A man, a woman, it is fate,
said Gaspard. Angua stood up. Carrot shot up too, so fast that his chair fell over.
I must be going, she said.
Don't go.
Now you just reach out, said Gaspard.
It'd never work, Angua told herself. It never does. Werewolves have to hang around with other werewolves. They're the only ones who understand. But, on the other hand, since she'd have to run away anyway... She held up a finger.
Just one moment, she said brightly,
and in one movement reached under the bed and pulled out Gaspard by the scruff of his neck.
You need me,
the dog whimpered as he was carried to the door. I mean, what does he know? His idea of a good time is showing you the Colossus of Moorpork. Put me down. The door slammed. Angua leaned on it. It'll end up just like it did in Pseudopolis, and Quirm, and...
Angua, said Carrot.
She turned.
Don't say anything, she said, and it might be all right.
After a while, the bedsprings went glink. And shortly after that, for Corporal Carrot, the disc world moved and didn't even bother to stop to cancel the bread and newspapers. Corporal Carrot awoke around 4 a.m., that secret hour known only to the night people, such as criminals, policemen, and other misfits. He lay on his half of the narrow bed and stared at the wall. It had definitely been an interesting night. Although he was indeed simple, he wasn't stupid, and he'd always been aware of what might be called the mechanics. He'd been acquainted with several young ladies, and had taken them on many invigorating walks to see fascinating ironwork and interesting civic buildings, until they'd unaccountably lost interest. He'd patrolled the whore pits often enough, although Mrs. Palm and the Guild of Seamstresses were trying to persuade the patrician to rename the area the Street of Negotiable Affection. But he'd never seen them in relation to himself, had never been quite sure, as it were, where he fitted in. This was probably not something he was going to write to his parents about. They almost certainly knew. He slid out of bed. The room was stifling hot with the curtains drawn. Behind him, he heard Angua roll over into the hollow left by his body. Then, with both hands and considerable vigour, he threw open the curtains and let in the round white light of the full moon. Behind him, he thought he heard Angua sigh in her sleep. There were thunderstorms out on the plain. Carrot could see lightning flashes stitching the horizon, and he could smell rain. But the air of the city was still and baking, all the hotter for the distant prospect of storms. The university's Tower of Art loomed in front of him. He saw it every day. It dominated half the city. Behind him, the bed went glink.
"I think there's going to be..."
he began and turned. As he turned away... he missed the glint of moonlight on metal from the top of the tower. Sergeant Colon sat on the bench outside the baking air of the watchhouse. There was a hammering noise from somewhere inside. Cuddy had come in 10 minutes before, with a bag of tools, a couple of helmets, and a determined expression. Colon was damned if he knew what the little devil was working on. He counted again very slowly, ticking off names on his clipboard. No doubt about it, the night watch had almost 20 members now, maybe more. Detritus had gone critical, and had sworn in a further 2 men, another troll, and a wooden dummy from outside Cork Sock's Natty Clothing Co. And was the origin, long after the events chronicled here were over, of an Ankh Morpork folk song scored for tin whistle and nasal passage. As I was walking along Lower Broadway, the recruiting party came picking up people by their ankles and saying they were going to volunteer to join the watch unless they wanted their Goohulug heads kicked in. So I went via Peach Pie Street and Holofernes instead, singing To Rely, etc. It never really caught on. If this went on, they'd be able to open up the old watch house near the main gates, just like the old days. He couldn't remember when the watch last had 20 men. It had all seemed a good idea at the time,